Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. We may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody here for the new year as we dive headlong into 2022. Not without some trepidation, however, and I'll get to some of that. Should I start with the fires out in Colorado? I'll start with the fires in Colorado because whenever something happens that's close by to a place where you live or lived or have a history, it tends to hit closer to home. Which is one of the reasons that the Bible isn't just a list of do's and don'ts. The Bible is a collection of stories about individual specific people with a lot of specifics in it, because we can relate to that a lot better. And so the fires out in Colorado, out in an area where I and my extremely attractive audio engineer had once lived and even worked very close to where we worked, in fact. The fire swept through last week, powered by a gale force winds over 100 miles an hour. The fires in Colorado, is it because they have a homosexual governor and they're evil and all of that? Well, there's plenty of that going around there, don't get me wrong. Plenty of that going around. But that's not really it. Fire in Colorado is mostly just a chance event. Mostly. Now, I know there's been a warrant issued, and I don't know all the details. Maybe there was a crime involved. That's certainly possible. Certainly possible. But fires in Colorado, for about 5,000 years, the prairies of Colorado have burned on a fairly regular basis. And the thing is, now there's just subdivisions there. There weren't before, so it was just, it's different now. And so, aside from the fact that everyone in the government there is evil and wicked and corrupt and should probably all be arrested immediately, if not sooner, and instead of allowing the governor and all of his minions and everyone from the dog catcher all the way up from grandstanding their moral superiority when it comes to climate change, and of course the climate change, which will be touted as indubitably one of the major causes, the drivers of the horrible fires. Yes. Well, instead of allowing them to grandstand, all the deviants and the thieves and the perverts running the government in the state of Colorado should be held to account for squandering all their grandkids' money. And our grandkids' money, by the way, on everything and anything but fire protection. Some fire protection, just a little bit, just barely enough to get by, just like the roads, just enough to get by. And then we're going to squander the money on every other wicked, horrible, awful, destructive thing that comes into our corrupt, perverse mind. And then when everything burns down, we're going to morally grandstand and preach to you people about climate change. All right. I'm not going to let them get by with it myself. I'm going to remind them, in fact, everyone in the state of Colorado, that while, you know, the fires were something that you could have seen coming. We all could have seen these coming, right? But everybody was slacking off and getting high and telling each other how much they care about equity. Uh-huh. Tell me how much you care about equity when your house is on fire. There. So I know. I feel sorry for the people who lost their houses in the fire. To a certain degree. And to a certain degree, I don't feel all that sorry for any of them. To a certain degree. All right. And I'll return to why that might be. I know that sounds horribly callous, right? I'm supposed to prostrate myself and wail and cast dust and rent my clothing over the people who lost their houses in the subdivisions of Colorado. I know I'm supposed to do that, and I know that's what everybody's doing. But we look at things a little bit differently sometimes here at the Weekly Worldview than you might hear on other media sources. And sometimes it's a bit rough and can even be a little bit offensive. And we're okay with that. All right, meanwhile, I want to go to an article. Should I start with this? Let's start with aliens. That's right. He said, aliens. You get the perfect amount of reverb there. We go into the... we have to start here. Got to get our sound effects back on track here. We start in the science... Really? File. Where NASA is hiring experts, I said. Experts! That's right, with a British accent even. So you know they're even smarter. Experts to help people... actually, priests, speaking of experts, those are the expert of the experts. They're hiring priests to consult with NASA on how they can help people deal with the inevitable discovery of, you heard it here first, aliens. Don't bring the reverb on too soon. It's got to be perfect. Aliens. Yeah, that's right. We've got a quote from the former head of the Astrobiology Institute. That's right. Astrobiology! Which is a non sequitur because as of yet, there is no astrobiology. That would mean biology in outer space. As of right now, we don't know of any. And if there is any out there, there's a pretty good chance that it came from here because here's the only place where there is any of that. But anyway, we have, let's see here. The former head of astrobiology, Carl Pilcher, said that theologians have been brought in, theologians, to consider the implications of applying the tools of late 20th and early 21st century science to questions that had been considered in religious traditions for hundreds or even thousands of years, unquote. Theologians brought into NASA because they are, they're preparing us, they want to prepare us, the people, for this inevitable discovery that's going to happen. And the article goes on with how there are millions and trillions and billions and quadrillions and hundreds of millions of galaxies and stars and planets, and there's got to be life out there. There just has to be. And so we just need to prepare the ignorant masses for the inevitable. Yeah. So it's really, if you've listened to this show, you know what this is really all about. Bringing in the theologians, you know. It's really to prepare for the inevitable collapse of Darwinian evolution and all of the theories surrounding everything having anything to do with that. That's it. The collapse of Darwinism. Oh, and the end of the lockdowns. Someday they're going to end as well. And then, of course, after the lockdowns and Darwinism are no longer functional, we'll have the inevitable, the obligatory discovery of aliens. That's right. The aliens will come. And the aliens will likely be transgender socialist, child trafficking molesters, and they'll fit right in with the governing philosophies of all of the modern Western democracies. Forget the Democrats. I tried to watch a show on TV. I forget what channel. I won't say. But they're obsessed with laying everything that's wrong with everything at the feet of the Democrat Party and this current administration. And it just rings kind of hollow. Because the problems that have been developing and are now consuming us, they predate the current administration. They predate the Democrat Party, for crying out loud. But I guess there's certain people make their living and a certain amount of money with just throwing a certain type of grist into the mill. And if that grist keeps churning it out, baby, just keep it going. Because it works. It works for us. All right. And they're the ones who expect that all of us will be taken in when they reveal to us the aliens. They'll want to know, are the aliens Republican or Democrat? Are they blue or are they red? And well, most people are going to go along. Here on The Worldview, we do some deeper, more meaningful stuff. We try to anyways. So as we move past Christmas, where the world makes believe Jesus was born in the middle of the dead of winter, that's fine. Okay, we're not going to, if you people, you want to have your Christmas tree, you want to do that and buy the presents, go for it. That's fine. And we do appreciate that the world, the secular world, gives some lip service to the fact, the undeniable historical fact, that Jesus Christ was born in Bethlehem and lived and was a genuine historic figure. And they even talk about his death, burial, and resurrection during the Christmas season because they can't avoid it. And I find it kind of comical that the way God has constructed the universe is that people can't help but acknowledge him, and we like that. But if we were actually living at the time that Jesus was born, if that were the case, which it's not necessarily right now, chances are he was born in the fall. And there's a lot of good evidence that Jesus was born in the fall. I'm not going to get into all that, and I don't mean the fall of man, but the autumn. In the autumn, yes, there's a pretty good chance. Late summer, early autumn was probably when Jesus was born. And listen to what happened. Okay, and think about this. Now we're coming out of Christmas. Now we're into the new year, but I want to take your mind back as the world just recently acknowledged the birth of Christ over the holidays. Here's what actually happened. They left this part out, just so you know. Luke chapter 2, when 8 days were completed for the circumcision of the child, his name was called Jesus. Now that they leave the circumcision out of the whole thing. They only focus on the swaddling clothes and the cradle, the manger, all of that. They leave out the part that he was circumcised on the eighth day. And then, according to Luke, his parents brought him to Jerusalem to offer the sacrifice according to the law. That's right. That's right. God said, every male child who opens the womb, his parents shall come to the temple and they shall give the offering. Couple of turtle doves. That's right. And so Joseph and Mary were religious, what would they be called? They were observant Jews is what they would be called. So they brought Jesus to the temple, and behold, there was a man whose name was Simeon. And he came by the Spirit into the temple, and he took up the baby Jesus in his arms and blessed God and said, my eyes have seen your salvation, a light to bring revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of your people, Israel. And then he said to Mary, the child is destined for the fall and rising of many in Israel, and for a sign which shall be spoken against. Yes, a sword will pierce through your soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. So this is the part they leave out about the baby Jesus. This is the part that makes people uncomfortable. The child will be destined for the fall and the rising. So the fall first. So that's the thing about the baby Jesus. You can give lip service to the manger and all of that and the wise men and the glittering stars and all the prettiness. But if you forget the fact that the baby Jesus came to bring the fall and the rising. So in order for you to recognize Jesus, you'll have to fall first, down on your knees, is what it's all about. That's right. And the prophet Simeon said that this child will be a sign which will be spoken against. So Jesus is going to bring a conflict into the world. He's going to be spoken against. And a sword, Mary, the prophet says, a sword, Mary, mom, the beautiful mother. The beautiful mother, the picture of the mother whose face is on all the Christmas cards. The prophet told her, yes, a sword will pierce through your own soul also, Mary, mother of Jesus. Even you will be called upon to make a decision when it comes to this child who will be spoken against and will bring the fall of many and their rising, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. So it's not just about the joy of the season and the brotherhood of man and all of that, and the snow. It's about the thoughts of many hearts being revealed, is what the baby Jesus was all about. And the media can't help, not just the media, but the culture in general, they can't help but acknowledge the actual historic undeniable birth of Jesus Christ. They can't do that. So they acknowledge it once a year in the dead of winter when everything's dark. But the light came into the world is what actually happened. And to all of you out there, the prophecy came that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. Want to make the announcement that Harry Reid is dead. Harry Reid is dead, and God gave Harry Reid the death penalty. Even though Harry Reid would have asserted that he didn't deserve the death penalty, God asserted that he did, and then God did it. So what did Harry deserve? Well, Harry deserved just what he got. All right, so we'll move on. Into the decline and fall file. I have to go faster. I'm not going to get to all this news. I shouldn't even stop to say that. J.K. Rowling's in the news. J.K. Rowling, as you may or may not have heard, tweeted some time ago, she tweeted, she did, that there were only two genders, is what she tweeted. And ever since then, she has been allegedly canceled, whatever that means. I'm not sure what that means, canceled. I think that means relatively shallow, stupid, dim-witted people who don't matter much at all no longer care about you, for whatever that's worth. So JK is experiencing cancellation because she asserted that there were only two genders. Well, now she's in the midst of a new trans rights row. The Daily Mail says she's in the midst of a new trans rights row. Or is it row? I forget how they pronounce that in English. Anyway, she's in the midst of another controversy because she now has clarified her views. See, she tweeted there are only two genders. Now she says, I never said there were only two genders. And then she says, there are innumerable gender identities, says J.K. Rowling. So she's not just amending what she said. She's completely backing off and reversing what she said, and she is bending the knee to the relatively shallow, stupid, dim-witted people who don't matter much at all, who don't care to hear from her anymore, and she wants them desperately now to hear from her. I don't know why. Does she need to sell them more books? How many books do you need to sell, JK? Is it worth your dignity? Is it worth abandoning the common sense, the small modicum of common sense that you displayed to the world? Is it worth it, really? Okay, all right, well, we'll move on because that's just embarrassing to see that. And we'll go from there to, into the science file, the follow the science file. Follow the science is, researchers have discovered, they're over there in Switzerland, they've discovered a new layer of muscle in the human face that they did not know existed before. I said a muscle in the human face that they did not know existed before. That's right, it's a new layer of the masseter muscle there in your jawline. It's a muscle that you use to chew and to kind of pull your jaw backwards a little bit. It's a pretty sophisticated layer of muscle that is completely distinct from the other two layers formerly identified of the masseter muscle. Now there are three distinct, observable, individual layers of a particular muscle in your lower jaw and mine and everybody else's. And the experts Well, the anatomy textbooks, according to the article here from The Hill, describe and have described the mass in her muscles for 100 years or more as having two layers, a superficial and a deep. But now a distinct deeper layer has been observed and described and will be included in the expert testimony going forward. So we only bring this story out. How interesting is that, first of all, that they found this layer of muscle? It's interesting, that's all. Next time the experts, okay, next time the experts insist that you must follow their advice without any question, without any hesitation, just keep in mind that the anatomy experts, all of them together, for 100, 200, 300, 500 years together, all of them don't even agree on all the muscles we have just in our jaw. They didn't know that. But just keep that in mind, that's all. While they're speaking, giving you directives and guidance, right? All of that. And anyway, questioning an expert opinion does not make you a conspiracy theorist, okay? While they're speaking to you, making these statements about guidance and how expert they are, watch the muscle in their jaw as it flexes and bulges. And let that just remind you that they didn't even know that was there. Okay, that's all. You're not a conspiracy theorist. You're not an insurrectionist. You're not a Neanderthal knuckle dragger. Just because you question the experts as you see their jaw muscle bulge and pulsate there while they're barking at you. Meanwhile, we have another expert. This is Dr. Adrian Owen. Dr. Adrian Owen is a British neuroscientist. I've got an article from sciencefocus.com. First of all, anyone who has Dr. dot before their name, red flag, that's all. It's just a red flag with me. It always has been. Because, anyway, I just know that doctors generally have MD after their name or DO after their name. If they have DR before their name, red flag comes up and I do. So I looked into Mr. Owen. He's not an actual doctor. What I mean is if you were sick, you wouldn't go see him, okay? He's a neuroscientist, whatever that is. That means he has matriculated and accumulated degrees in academia, but he's never made anybody well. Okay, that's not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm not a doctor either, okay? I do have DR before my name. But I'm not, so red flag right there. Take everything I say with a grain of salt, okay? All right, so Dr. Adrian Owen, British neuroscientist, he wrote an article in Science Focus about the people in a vegetative state. A vegetative state, I said. Yes, I'm not talking about the person driving alone in their Prius with a mask on. No, I'm talking about people in a genuine medical condition. A vegetative state, let's just go to the article from the science file. A vegetative state is described as wakefulness without awareness. That's how it has been described. Patients open their eyes. They have sleeping and waking cycles, but they're non-responsive to any form of external stimulation. Dr. Owens writes, they are both there and not there. And for decades, it was assumed that such patients lack awareness. They're unaware of who they are. They're unaware of where they are. They're unaware of the predicament they're in, writes Dr. Adrian Owen, a British neuroscientist. So, just that statement, let's stop with that. He said, here we have a person who has been described as awake and not awake. We're not sure if they're awake or not. And so the assumption has been that they're unaware. So let's just stop right there and ask, what kind of mindset would assume that? If you have someone and you're not sure if they're awake or aware, why would you assume that they're not? I would assert that the people who assumed that they are not. Well, their mindset was the opposite of love. If you loved and cared about people, and you had someone and you weren't sure of their state, are they awake, are they asleep, are they aware, or are they not? You would not assume that they're not. You would assume that they are. But that's not what we've done. And by the way, I'm not like Dr. Adrian Owen. Dr. Adrian Owen says it was assumed that such patients lack awareness. No, doctor, we assumed. You, doctor, as a neuroscientist. Me, just as a person. We all are part of this civilization that has assumed that these people were not. We need to take responsibility for it. Because if you don't take responsibility for it, you can't change your mind publicly and repent of it and change things. So, Dr. Owen, I appreciate your article here, but stop trying to remove yourself and me and all of us from responsibility. We're all responsible for the fact that we have treated people in a vegetative state horribly. Okay? I feel bad about it. All right. So for the last 100 years, since medical technology has given us the ability to maintain the lives of these people, that is the mindset that has developed among us, among the doctors, among all of us. That is the mindset that they're not conscious, that they're not aware. That mindset has developed or evolved, if you prefer to try to remove yourself from any responsibility for it. That's what's happened. But now, and this goes back, by the way, I did some research on Dr. Owen back to 06 or earlier when he started writing about it. Now more than 1,000 patients have been scanned using functional MRI technology, brain imaging, and an independent scientific review now has established that at least 25% of these people are conscious and are aware of every conversation, of every decision being made about them. They're aware of it. They hear it. In the United States, there are about between 15 and 40,000 people right now who are said to be in one of these vegetative states. And just this recent study confirms that tens of thousands of them may not be what they appear at all, says Dr. Adrian Owen. They may not be what they appear to be. And Dr. Owen, I would just say to you that that should have been the assumption all along. If we actually love people and we actually care about people and we're not sure if they're well or if they're unwell or if they can hear us or they're aware, why did we assume they were not? That should be an accusation against the soul and the heart of every one of us. And it should call us to change our mind about this. Not just the science. The science is now revealing to us our own hearts. Just like the 3D and 4D ultrasounds with the babies in the womb that eventually revealed to us that what we were actually doing was killing actual people in the womb. The science just catches up. The truth was always there. Anyway, Dr. Owen goes on. Despite the astonishing discoveries, various regulatory bodies are still dragging their feet. He cites the Royal College of Physicians, who continue to state that patients in prolonged vegetative states, brain imaging is not routinely required. And he goes in and he gives a litany, I'll link to the article, of other people he blames, because he doesn't take any responsibility for himself. Even though he's been writing about this since 2006, I couldn't find a single statement from Dr. Adrian Owen, probably the world's leading expert on the fact that we can communicate with people in a vegetative state via imaging and other technologies, electroencephalographs. He's figured out ways to actually communicate to people and prove to you that he is communicating with them. It's really astonishing what this man has done. Enlightening, but I can find nowhere a single statement about the morality of it all by this man, which is shocking to me and instructive as to the state of affairs of humanity right now. Why is the world falling apart? Why has everyone lost their mind? Why is there so much hatred? Why does it seem so precarious, like we're going to lose everything? Why is that? It's because of this. This is just another symptom of it all. Dr. Owen closes with, to fail to test for consciousness using technologies like functional MRI is to deprive brain-injured patients the opportunity to make themselves heard. They are voiceless, says Dr. Owen, yet we have created technologies that can give them a voice. It is high time we allow them to use these technologies to once again take their place among us in the land of the living. So there's an instructional statement from Dr. Owen, and we appreciate that, Doc. I mean, he can't deny the science, right? But you can't call people's heads to this, Doctor. And we appreciate your work in the areas of technology and that you've given us science and facts that we can't deny. But it's not the science and the facts that you can't deny that change people's hearts about how they feel. It's calling them to the morality of the situation, Doctor. It's calling on them to understand that this is unloving. This isn't good. You're not a nice person. You're not a good person if you don't believe that we have failed these brain-injured people. You're not a good person if you don't give these people the opportunity to once again take their place among us in the land of the so-called living. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. And as uncomfortable as it might be sometimes, it can be a little bit uncomfortable, kind of like oral surgery. Ever had that? Talk about uncomfortable. I had to go back in. I'm getting an implant retreaded. I had an implant. It went flat, so to speak, and having it retreaded, and I had to go in and have I don't want to get into all the details. It was unpleasant, though, right? And the sad thing about oral surgery, when you've lost a tooth and you're trying to have it replaced, is at the end of the day, you go through all this suffering and you spend extraordinary amounts of money, and at the end, you can't really tell anything happened. It's kind of depressing. You know, you'd hope you'd have something shiny and new, but you get to a point in your life where you're just trying to get back to what it was. And then you realize how nice it was before it all started falling apart. Right? Not unlike the plumbing in your house. I took the opportunity of the holidays and some time off.
Holiday.
The holiday, indeed. To fix a plumbing problem. Well, the plumbing problem I didn't fix. I merely exposed the plumbing problem by tearing out a portion of the floor and the wall. Rather ham-fistedly, I must say. I did not do the demo according to established protocols. It was an ad hoc demolition project. And anyway, I hired a plumber to fix the actual plumbing problem, but I still had the gaping hole in the floor and the gaping hole in the wall that have been there now for months. And so over the holiday, I took the opportunity to repair the floor and then eventually repair the drywall and then the stucco and then the paint and then eventually the baseboards. And now all I have left to do is repaint a final coat on everything. And I stood back and I looked at it and it looks like nothing ever happened, except the floor doesn't look as good. So I end up back functional, but it doesn't quite look like what it was before because I really should have hired someone to take the floor out, which I found out later I didn't need to take the floor out. Boy, does that hurt. Try ripping up tile and then finding out, you didn't really have to do that. Okay, thank you very much. Please, just stick a drill in my mouth. Just start drilling holes in the bones of my skull. All right, so there you go, plumbing and oral surgery. That's what our holiday season has been. Well, that's been part of it anyways. Meanwhile, let's go now for quickly into the COVID news because COVID is a fast dissipating story and we hope that it disappears quickly. But from the widespread panic file, the University of Pittsburgh has told all of its students to shelter in place. Shelter in place! Isn't that what they say when there's an active shooter on the campus? Anyway, now there's a cold virus. Shelter in place! When students come back for the spring semester, they're to shelter in place, whatever that, I think that means hide under your desk. The shelter-in-place order, according to university officials, will last for an undetermined amount of time. Okay, that's got to be reassuring for the students out there at U of P. Some buildings will be closed. Group projects will be done virtually. They're asking students to limit close contact with others, wear masks, and socially distant. The next best approach, says the university officials there at U of P, is to establish pods. Establish pods and avoid new close contacts. So let's start living as if we're in prison. Have you ever been to the county jail? They have pods? Maybe, no. Anyway. Since we're living in prison, let's start acting like it. Anyway, so there you have it, the UOP widespread panic. Meanwhile, the Westminster Dog Show was canceled. They say it's been rescheduled, they say it's been postponed, except they haven't given a date, which means it's been canceled. So until you give us a date, it's been canceled, okay? You can't say postponed unless you have a date. It's like saying you're engaged, but there's no date. That doesn't work. You're not engaged. That means you're shacking up. Once you have a date, then we count you as engaged. And for the Westminster Dog Show, same thing. Anyway, they're freaking out over the Omicron variant. Just as I divined the idea that this might happen. And it was weird, too, because it looked like at the beginning of the New Year holiday, after Christmas, going into New Year's, it looked like they maybe weren't going to be able to pull this off. Because too many people were just like, wait a second, what? Seriously? Again? And some of the actual numbers started to come out of South Africa with this Omicron, and it was like, wait a second, nobody died. Cases went through the roof, but no. And so for a minute, it looked like maybe they weren't going to be able to pull this off, but then somehow, miraculously, due to this mass delusion event that I defined, by the way, I defined it before Robert Malone. I just want everyone to know that. I know Robert Malone did the big interview on, who's the wrestler? Joe Rogan? The pro wrestler? I forget. No, he wasn't. Not a wrestler. I'm sorry. I apologize. He was some other type of man who beats other men unconscious for money. Joe Rogan, UFC guy. Very famous podcaster, Dr. Malone, who I've been talking about for 2 years, goes on Joe Rogan's show, and Joe Rogan is now somehow Moses coming down from the mountain. All right, fine. Let Joe Rogan have, but Dr. Malone defined what he called a mass, I forget what he called, mass psychosis. I can't remember the exact words. Go listen to Joe Rogan. Let me plug his show. That's what he needs from me, Joe Rogan. Go listen to Dr. Malone. He talks about basically what I called a mass delusion event, and I think I've been saying it for a year. And comparing it to what happened in Germany, where a significant plurality of people just became almost hypnotized by this event and this man and all of this craziness. Anyway, so now where was I going with that? I don't even know where I was going with that. I think I was coming back to Candace Owens, believe it or not. Was I? I was going to make a point there about Dr. Malone and the mass delusion event, but I lost it. Anyway, if you're listening to this on the radio, then it sounds weird that I lost it because you're actually listening. You know what's going on, and I'm talking, and I don't. But I just have to move on because I just can't figure out what I was talking about. Was I just trying to make the point that I beat Dr. Malone to the punch? That could be all I was trying to say. But let's go into the widespread hubris file where Candace Owens interviewed Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was all about the vaccines. I came up with a vaccine. I came up with 3 vaccines, and they're all very, very, very good. How many times did I say very, very good? In less than 9 months, by the way. It was supposed to take 12 years. 12 years. We did it. 3 vaccines. 9 months. Very, very good. And then Candace Owens, unfortunately and uncomfortably, points out to Mr. Trump. She says, more people have died under COVID this year with the vaccines. And Trump just didn't even miss a beat. He just said, oh, no. Vaccines work. They work. The ones who get very sick, they're the ones who didn't take the vaccine. And if you take the vaccine, you're protected, said Donald Trump. People aren't dying when they take the vaccine. And anyway, he just went on to glorify and just pile and heap praise upon himself. Over the face. He said, the vaccine is one of the greatest achievements of mankind, said Donald Trump of himself. And Candace Owens, Candace Owens has proven herself to be basically a prostitute for hire for the so-called conservative talk media. I don't know what you'd call it, because I'm not going to call it conservative. I'm not going to call it right wing. Candace Owens will pimp herself out to anyone who will write her a big enough check, as long as they're not MSNBC or CNN. I mean, she does have some standards. But she basically went on, and I don't mean that in any kind of dirty, immoral sense. I mean it in a philosophical and intellectual sense, Candace. I would never insult your integrity on that level. But politically, you'll pimp yourself out. I'm sorry. You just did it with Donald Trump. She came on after he embarrasses himself and deserves to be condemned for such idiocy. Candace comes on and protects him, and the next day she said, you know what, Donald Trump's just too old to do any real independent research on vaccines. He watches, like, NBC's Today Show in the morning, and, of course, he believes all that. Instead of Candace coming on and saying, Mr. Trump, you need to break free of this delusion, and you need to admit that what you did with this Operation Warp Speed turns out to have been foolhardy and possibly quite dangerous, so let's just stop it. And Donald, one of the only ways you ever break through in life and make yourself and your life better and make the people around you better is to admit you were wrong and change your mind. That's what Candace should be saying to Donald. That's what we're saying to Donald. I've done it, Donald. And yeah, it's embarrassing and it hurts for a little while and you feel like an idiot. But in the end, it makes everything better, like I said before. Anyway, anyway, Donald Trump, let me just get to the statement. The vaccine is one of the greatest achievements of mankind. I mean me. I mean, he didn't say that. I'm adding that last part that he meant himself. But you judge for yourself. Anyway, generally speaking, Mr. Trump, yes, vaccines are one of the greatest achievements of mankind. They are. They are. But this vaccine is possibly, Mr. Trump, possibly, just consider this for a moment, possibly the greatest misjudgment and application of governmental power and medical technology and opinion in the history of mankind, quite possibly. I mean, you can't argue with the fact, Mr. Trump. I know this hasn't been on the Today Show or on whatever morning news. I thought he watched Fox and Friends. Oh, that's right. The truth hasn't been on Fox and Friends either. Anyway, Mr. Trump, this vaccine is already the most deadly medicine ever distributed by the legitimate authorities in American history. I mean, since RU486 anyways. But that was designed to kill people. This is the most deadly medicine ever distributed. Medicine that wasn't designed to kill people. This is the most deadly one ever distributed legitimately in America. Only the abortion pill has killed and injured more people than this vaccine. And that's just what we have documented. And so, Mr. Trump and Candace, you should be ashamed of yourself. It's time to look at the truth and just admit the truth. And can't you just say I was wrong? Let's change course. Let's move in another direction. Let's try to make things better. Could you do that? Maybe, please. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you very much, boys. lay blame where blame is due and call for repentance where repentance is due. I know that's not a popular word, but it's not even known in the common vernacular of anyone under the age of 30 outside of a small group of, I don't know, very few. Anyway, let's go to the widespread. This is just a widespread file because we don't even know what to call it anymore. Is it widespread panic? Is it widespread graft? Is it widespread tyranny, insanity, conspiracy? What? Who knows? The Biden administration announced that it struck a multi-million dollar deal to build a new factory to pump out COVID-19 testing kits. That's right. But that's not the big part of the story. That's not the scary part. That could be just regular old graft. Right? What are we going to say? That Biden awarded the contract to Hunter or maybe Hunter's cousin? For the fact, no, that's old-fashioned graft. What's scary about this is that the factory, which is going to be built allegedly in Sheboygan, the factory in Sheboygan is due to be completed in late 2024. What? Stop, McBurney. What'd you say, 2024? The pandemic's supposed to be over by then. Isn't it? Wasn't it? Wait a second. Sheboygan, they're going to make they're going to make 80 million tests a month. 80 million tests a month starting in 2024. That'll produce a lot of positives for a 2024-2025 cold and flu season. Anyway, I look at this article and I'm thinking like the TSA. I'm just seriously thinking this may never end. And it's quite possible that everyone around me thinks I'm crazy for have ever thinking that this should or could end. Perhaps I'm the one who's out of step, that I should have known and should have seen from the beginning that this is not going to end. Not that this is not going to end, this cannot end. And that the majority of people possibly think that that's rational, that this cannot end. This pandemic cannot end. Anyway, now I'm talking myself. I'm going to end up having a stroke or something just thinking about that. All right. So instead of that, let's go to China for the widespread tyranny file. Good old-fashioned tyranny. Nothing strange going on here. This is how it works. Weibo post. No, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the... Yeah, Weibo, which is their version of Facebook over in China. People are posting out of Xi'an province, which was locked down just before Christmas. 13 million people. Lockdown, 140 positive cases of alleged coronavirus. They were positive, the corona, whatever. 140 some cases, they locked down 13 million people. Now people are posting on Weibo, how do I live, unquote. Quote, what do we eat, unquote. These are the posts on Facebook in China. Days ago, we could go out to buy groceries, but that's been canceled. We now can't go out to grocery stores. People are posting that they're hungry. And there's online grocery apps over there in Xi'an. They're either sold out, they tell the people they're beyond their delivery range, or they're charging very high prices for the food that they have in stock. And so now starvation appears to be a possibility for people locked down in Xi'an province in China. Starvation. Hey, Doug, no. Communist dictatorships have never starved people to death. That's a conspiracy theory. The Chinese have certainly never done that. Okay. The Chinese Communist government is dealing with these social media posts, says Breitbart, in the time-honored tactic of deleting them. They just erased a hashtag on Weibo, hashtag difficult to buy food in Xi'an. That hashtag had 300 million views, all kinds of shares. People are sharing. So is it possible that the Chinese Communist government is starving people in Xi'an to kill them? No way. That would never happen. That's crazy. Well, in Xi'an province, people have been arrested for disrupting the quarantine and for, quote, fabricating a rumor about excessive death in the province, and also for reporting that looting taking place in the region. For this, we arrest you. Mm-hmm. People caught outside without permission in Xi'an could spend up to 10 days in jail, or 10 years, or 100 years, or life, or more. I mean, it's China, after all. 10 days? I mean, once they throw you in jail, who knows what happens to you in China, for crying out loud. So that's the lockdown in China. That's the pattern that we followed here in America. And for some reason, we went along with it. Astonishingly to me, it's astonishing that we could even think about locking down or any of that. But we did, and we did it, and here we are. And there they are. And where are we? Where are we headed? Well, from the widespread panic file, emergency rooms in Vermont. Vermont. It's like you hear the name Vermont and you just laugh. Why? Well, let's get to it here. Emergency rooms in Vermont are being overwhelmed with people who have tested positive for COVID but have no symptoms. I just paused so that you could chuckle. I paused for the obligatory laugh over the people of Vermont. Probably the most inbred, dim-witted state in the country. Only because there's been a relatively small group of Western Europeans interbreeding there for 400 years. It's just an accident of genetics. It's sad. But anyway, you got to wonder, how is it that people in Vermont test positive and feel like they have to go to the ER? The ER. Do you understand that the ER, it stands for emergency room? Okay, anyway, we've got the medical director of the emergency department at Richland Regional Medical Center there in Vermont, who's advising, listen to what the medical director says to the people of Vermont. You people should go to the ER only if you have a positive test and are very sick. I would say to the medical director, please leave out the part about having a positive test. These are Vermonters we're talking to. You don't even want to leave that. Just tell them only go to the ER if you're very sick. In fact, the ER you should only go to if you think you're going to die. Isn't that the standard we always had for the ER? I know that's been my standard for taking myself to the ER. I only go to the ER if I think I'm going to die and there's no other options. Right? Isn't that where they take you when there's blood gushing from your body after a car accident? Isn't that what the ER is for? In Vermont, they get a positive test. Hey, Franny, we better get down to the ER. We're positive. And there they go. Anyway, let's see. There's a similar situations are occurring in other parts of the New England state. Okay. Like I said, the most inbred, dim-witted part of the country, and it's sad. But anyway, it's a mass delusion event. These people are not sick, yet for some reason they feel like they need to go to the ER, you know? They don't want to shove Jews in the oven, but for some reason they feel like they need to raise the right hand and say Sieg Heil. Like, is there anything wrong with that? Are we okay here? No, you're not okay. Okay, that's from the widespread panic file. Now, let's go into the personhood file. We're going to check in with an article from The Atlantic. If you don't read The Atlantic, it's probably because you're not demented. You're probably not part of a child sex trafficking ring if you don't read The Atlantic. That could be a joke from a stand-up comedian. Do you read The Atlantic? You might be a member of a child sex trafficking ring. That could be a joke, but it's not a joke. All right. So anyway, we go to the personhood file, where the title on the article from The Atlantic, the Journal of Leftist Thinking in America. The author asks, why is it so hard to figure out if America's enormous surge in theft is real? That's author Amanda Mull, a leftist degenerate. A completely vacuous, hysterical person. She is a person. I'll give her that. Why is it so hard to figure out if America's enormous surge in retail theft is real? She's not sure. She says, you've probably seen shoplifting stories because there are a lot of them. The incidents are genuine mayhem. You've seen the videos. But wait, are we still talking about shoplifting? ? And so she asks in the first line, is this surge in theft real? And then she says, are we talking about shoplifting? Subtly changing the topic for people who are stupid. So if you're stupid, or if you have a tendency to want to be a leftist idiot, then you'll allow her to shift the topic from all these videos we've seen of people smashing glass and stealing things right in front of all of us, to, is this really shoplifting we're talking about? Let's talk about that now, because I'm smart. She goes on. She says, no, we're not talking about shoplifting. The narrative that we're seeing conflates an array of very different offenses into a single crime wave that is said to be cresting all over the country in a frenzy of naked avarice and shocking violence. So she uses hyperbolic language to make it seem like we're all just overreacting when we see the videos of people smashing the glass and stealing everything. That shouldn't be that shocking. I mean, come on, it's not naked avarice and shocking violence. It's just a little glass broken. A couple of watches. What are we freaking out about? She says, a handful of viral videos have set Americans on edge. On edge. But search for real, objective evidence of an accelerating retail crime wave. If you do that, the more difficult it is to be sure that you can know anything at all. So author Amanda over at The Atlantic is implying that we may not be able to know anything at all when it comes to what's going on with all of this. Is it shoplifting? Is it retail theft? Is any of this even real? I mean, stop and think about it. Are you just freaking out or what? Maybe you're just freaking out. She goes on to write, is theft really more common? Is current theft more severe? You would think that the answer to these questions would be readily available. But the reality of the situation is that they are not. It is not so clear cut. I mean, just relax. You might just be freaking out. She says, when I asked retailers how they squared falling property crime rates with their own assertions that theft has skyrocketed, these retailers weren't exactly forthcoming. Uh-huh. Well, and then she goes on with to vomit out statistics. I have in parentheses here, BS. I'm not sure why. She goes on to just vomit out statistics on how allegedly crime is down everywhere. Uh-huh. But retailers are not very forthcoming when it says, oh, well, what do you mean there's more theft? Crime is down. How do you square that? As she's talking to a guy who's had all the glass smashed out of the front of his store and all the stuff stolen. And she's saying, look, crime is down. What are you talking about? Right? Anyway, she goes on with her article. She says, if you've made it this far in the article and you still feel unsure whether you understand organized retail theft, well, take a number. Trying to quantify it means wading through a morass of slippery terms, questionably reliable estimates, and statistical sleights of hand. You know, like the one I just did by saying crime is down while I was walking through all that broken glass. That type of thing. She ends with, good old thieves are palatable common enemy. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to read that as if I was a thinking, thoughtful person. Let me go on with how she actually closed the article. Good old thieves are like a palatable common enemy. Better to fear them than the other types of casual violence that have seeped into everyday life in America and the rot that may have created it. I will give credit that she is a fairly talented writer. Is Amanda Mull, writing for The Atlantic. She's a fairly talented writer using her gifts in the furtherance of evil. But even so, a fairly talented writer using her gifts in the furtherance of wickedness and corruption ends on a note that a humble talk show host in furtherance of righteousness can reflect back upon her and her article and amplify out to the world this point that she makes at the end about the casual violence that has seeped into everyday life in America and the rot that may have created it. There is a level of casual violence in America that I mentioned earlier when we talked about the story about the vegetative states, the people who we weren't sure if they were conscious, so we treated them as if they weren't. and how horrible that is, how horribly that reflects on us. And the fact that we've murdered 75 million innocent kids, maybe more, maybe close to 100 million, maybe over 100 million innocent people murdered in our neighborhoods, in the bathroom, in the apartment next door, in silence. These people with no voice and no ability to defend themselves have been crushed and murdered and poisoned and burned and killed. And we've just gone along and we've not address this fact that this casual level of violence is going to lead to a quite acute level of violence in the streets and in our homes and in our communities and in our towns and cities. But it has nothing to do with anything at all to do with anything to do with what Amanda Mull thinks it has to do with, because she talks about racism and all the other famous leftist saws, but she doesn't want to point to the actual violence. The actual violence. Nobody's confused about the shoplifting, Ms. Mull. Everybody knows what crime is, Ms. Mull. We can know something, despite your assertion that maybe we can't know anything at all. We actually can. We know we can. And not only do we know what shoplifting is, we know what murder is. We know what it is in our heart of hearts, all of us. Whether you're blue or red, you know what it is. And you know what's going on, and you can act like you're not sure what's going on or that you need someone to clarify. I'm not sure. Are you sure? Come on. We're all sure. Don't try to play that off. All right. Now we go from there into the Christian persecution file, where we've been reporting on the Christian missionaries kidnapped in Haiti. It was announced just before Christmas that they were released. They were released. And then it was announced. And then everybody was wondering who paid the ransom. Did the State Department pay the ransom? No, the State Department slept through the whole thing. They were passed out in the corner, drooling throughout the entire affair, was the U.S. State Department. What happened was the Christians escaped. That's right. They didn't wait for the State Department or anyone else to pay a ransom. I've got a quote from a spokesman for the mission, the missionary group. Over the time of their captivity, God gave various hostages a desire to attempt to escape. How about that? Now, there's Paul in the Bible, the Apostle Paul, by the way, for those of you who are unenlightened and uneducated, the Apostle Paul tells us to test the spirits. Actually, it might be James or John. Anyway, it's in the New Testament. Yeah, speaking of unenlightened. So I'm not sure what book it's in. Hey, I know what testament it's in. Huh? That's better than some. All right. Test the spirits, right? So if you're being held captive by someone who might cut your head off and you feel like you might should escape, trust me, that's from God. They felt like God was leading them to escape, and they were right. God was. And they listened. They say that God seemed to be leading us. God seemed to be leading us in this way, that maybe we should escape. Late on the night of December 15th, they found a way to open the door where they were locked. They quickly escaped the place. They followed the guidance of the stars. By the way, the stars are from God. Those are signs from God. He even says in the Bible they're for signs. They are. And they followed the stars, and they found someone who helped, who made a phone call to the people who eventually rescued them. And then eventually someone called the State Department and shook them awake in the corner and wiped the vomit off their shirt and the drool off their chin and let them know that they could issue a press release about the Christian missionaries in Haiti who actually ended up escaping. All right, now I've got stories about the public schools that I don't want to do. I've got it's time for the end of the show, actually. We've gone a little bit long, as we tend to do. Let's just go to some of the domestic tranquility and the mass murder. If you're confused about the definition of shoplifting, or you're just not sure what crime is, we'll come to L.A. just before Christmas. The police officers responded at the mall looking for a suspect who was allegedly beating a woman. They found him. He was assaulting this woman. Officers believed that he might kill the woman. That's how bad the assault was. He was beating her with some instrument. And so they shot him. And they killed him. And unfortunately, they also shot through the wall into a dressing room in a store and killed a 14-year-old girl by accident. Just horrible. This is America. This is what you get, America. The guilt of 70 million murders is going to be visited upon us and our children now. And now your shopping trips to the mall will become killing fields. So can anyone even go into the store now without thinking, at least for a moment in the back of their mind, that I might be shot and killed? Can you go to the mall? Can you go to the grocery store? No, we can't. Can kids go into school and can kids walk through the doors of their schools without thinking, even if just for a moment, that I might be shot and killed? They cannot. And this is the fruit of 70 years of tolerating the murder of innocent children, those with no voice who can't protect themselves. Meanwhile, from the Wednesday Night About Town file, this is a night in Denver, 5 o'clock last Thursday. A suspect shot and killed two women in Denver. He traveled through several intersections, opening fire, killing at least one other man, injuring other people. Denver police attempted to pull him over. So he shot at them, they shot at him, he shot at them, they shot at him some more. He then drove to Lakewood, a suburb, where someone called in another shooting, where someone else was killed. They don't know if that shooting had to do with this shooting. It may be related, it may be unrelated, but there was another shooting in Lakewood, and someone definitely is dead. And the crime spree continued. At least one officer was shot. And the suspect was eventually shot and killed, although the police are not sure who exactly killed him, because there was an awful lot of shooting going on. That is Wednesday Night About Town in Denver, Anytown, USA, circa 2022, as nobody's really confused about what this is, are they? Maybe. Maybe you don't want to admit it. Maybe you're confused. Well, we're sure. We're exactly sure what's going on here. And so that's why we're here, to just tell you all about it and to enlighten you and to point you in the right direction, which is to the living God who created all of us. And will judge all of us and has the ability to forgive and restore all of us. That's it for the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and my friends everywhere. And my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.